Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof, and your shoes get so hot, you wish your tired feet were fireproof. Under the boardwalk, down by the sea, yeah, on a blanket with my baby's where I'll be.
Under the boardwalk,
out of the sun,
under the boardwalk,
we'll be having some fun.
Under the boardwalk,
people walking about.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be making love.
Under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's the Scunny Summer Statewide Text to Win Giveaway. One person every hour will win a Wisconsin Dells prize pack. One every day will win a pair of club-level Milwaukee Brewer tickets, and two grand prize winners will win a Wisconsin staycation. Download the Civic Media app and use it to text the word SUN, S-U-N, for your chance to win. Text the word SUN, S-U-N, like the sun in the sky, to enter the statewide giveaway. Calvin, I don't know if you were aware of this. You couldn't be because you're a younger guy, and I certainly didn't know. But are you aware that, there's only, let me see, how many states? There's only 14 states in the United States that doesn't have an age limit for marriage. I know you're looking. I would have thought that all across our nation, you had to be 18 years old to get married.
Yeah, that's what I assumed. I know I've heard of laws where if a 17-year-old is pregnant, they're allowed to get married.
Right.
Like, I've heard of that, but I didn't know you could just decide to get married younger than that if you wanted.
Well, so the battle to ban child marriage in America. This is in today's Newsweek. And so, child marriage remains legal in most U.S. states, leaving minors open to abuse and vulnerabilities within the legal system, advocates say. Only 12 states currently have a minimum marriage age of 18. And about 300,000 children have gotten married since 2000, according to Unchained at Last, an organization that fights for laws banning child marriage. Advocates warn that married minors face unique challenges in breaking out of poverty, are left vulnerable to physical and emotional abuse, and may struggle to gain access to the systems intended to protect, abuse victims. I just for the life of me don't understand why in a society like ours, which is judges many other societies, that this could be possible. Here's a synopsis of a short story of a young lady, who suffered through some of this. Jenny Bradberg is among those who got married before becoming an adult. Bradberg, now 45, married a 44-year-old friend of her father when she was 16 years old.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, but it was legal.
Yeah, and I don't understand how.
Yeah, after what she told Newsweek was years of grooming that began when she was 14. She said that when her father found out about the abuse, he blamed and tried to kill her, leading to her mother removing her from her father's home in Louisiana and moving her to Florida But the abuse did not end, Bradbury said. The friend of the father continued to visit, providing a house, phone, and utilities for her family, while she says he continued to sexually abuse her, eventually leading to pregnancy. Bradbury says that her mother believed that the only way to fix the situation was to have the two get married, so they did. Years of challenge would follow. I don't know how in America today this can even be possible. You know, Brendan, Ted Nugent, Elvis, way too many celebrities have done this. But even in the case of those who have done it, the bigger question is, why is it still legal? Up until 2018, every state still allowed child marriage. Then Delaware became the first to end the practice. Several others have followed suit, with Virginia being the latest to do so. In April, New Hampshire could become the next state to end child marriage, as bipartisan bill to end it is awaiting Republican Governor Chris Sununu's signature. But the majority of states still allow child marriage, and a bill that would end the practice in Missouri failed to garner enough support to pass the legislature. How is that possible, Calvin?
Yeah, it seems like we almost have a contradiction of laws, because it's illegal for an adult to have a sexual relationship with a minor, but now there's laws that allow adults to marry minors, so it's terrible. It doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, I mean, you could maybe understand that, you know, 200 years ago, right? Maybe you could have understood it then, but not today. You would think that, you know, there wouldn't be one legislature anywhere in the nation that would say, I support that.
Yeah, you'd think it would be a slam dunk, easy political win for politicians to sign on and agree with this. The resistance it's seen is troubling.
You know, married minors face unique legal barriers. Children who get married before they turn 18 face unique legal barriers because they are not considered legal adults. Well, if they're not considered legal adults, why are they allowed to get married, Calvin?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
No. They need permission from the guardian, either their spouse or parents who may be involved in forcing them to marry, to access many of the systems they need to get help. So it, again, is one of those things, man, that you just say, man, this is another one of those things that we should certainly, if nothing else, bring this to the attention of all and force the hand of Congress and others to bar, you know, this forcing young people under 18 to get married.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Anyway, so let me do this. So I wanted to talk now about where is it? Federal judge is blocking Joe Biden administration. Again, we always talk about what Joe Biden's administration is attempting to do that's right and righteous, and what prevents them from doing the righteous and right things. So many times Republicans who get in the way of doing things that make sense and refuse to support the sensical things. Here's another example of that. Federal judge blocks rule closing gun show loophole in four states. Now, I've talked about the gun show loophole many times on this show, because if you don't know, a gun show loophole means that anybody can sell guns, unlicensed dealers at gun shows can sell guns to anybody who's at the gun show without background checks, you know, without waiting periods. Gun show loopholes are really contradictory. It makes zero sense to say that licensed dealers at gun shows have to have a 48-hour waiting period and do background checks on the people who come to purchase guns from them. And these are licensed dealers, right? They're licensed by the government to sell guns or firearms, but not without doing the 48-hour waiting period and the background checks. So then somebody tell me how it makes sense then that an average Joe can walk into the gun show with his guns and sell them in the same environment without doing the 48-hour waiting period and the background check. Tell me how that makes sense. 844-967-2789. Even if you're a person who's a gun owner and a person who believes in, you know, Second Amendment rights, try to make it sensical to me and others that the gun show loophole makes sense. 844-967-2789. And so since you won't be able to make sense out of it because it doesn't make any sense, then why are they pushing against Joe Biden, who's trying to end that? 844-967-2789. Man, you just can't make these things up. Got to be able to do things that are right in this nation. Shouldn't we be pushing to do things that are right? 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
We'll be making love
under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
On a blanket with my baby, that's where I'll be.
Under the boardwalk,
out of the sun.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be having some fun.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, there's no question that, you know, this makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, the people who are dying in communities, children, and all of those things because of this loophole, and I mean, they even call it a loophole. I mean, just think about how moronic and idiotic that is. The gun show loophole. Why is there a loophole? Let me do this quickly before we go to the phone lines. A federal judge in Texas blocked the Biden administration's attempt to close the so-called gun show loophole on Wednesday, expanding a prior temporary ruling to impact Texas, Louisiana, Utah, and Mississippi. Judge Matthew Kaczmarek ruled last month that the requirements to run a background check, let me slow this down because this is at the root of it, insanity. Judge Matthew Kaczmarek ruled last month that the requirements to run a background check before purchasing a firearm could not go into effect in Texas. His final ruling Wednesday expands that injunction to the three other states. The Biden administration rule went into effect May 20th. The plaintiffs argued that it infringe on the rights of gun owners and exceeded the federal government's authority. Casmerick agreed with plaintiffs, finding that the rule was effectively requiring that firearm owners prove innocence rather than the government prove guilt, which could trigger civil or criminal penalties for conduct deemed lawful just yesterday. Hey, good morning to you, Mike from Kenosha. I'm not bright enough to understand that double talk, but I'm just going at the root of it. It makes no sense that licensed gun owners have to follow the law, but then citizens don't. You say what, sir?
Yeah, it's as clear as mud to me there, Earl.
I know,
to your point. Yes. You know, there's so many things that don't make sense. So many things that defy logic. But what you're seeing here with this Texas judge is a federal society appointed judge. Again, the federal society is a group that has replaced the mainstream judges with hand-selected Federalist Society-groomed appointments. That's the takeover that the scheme, Sheldon Whitehouse's book and YouTube channel talks about. You know, but I got to kind of turn back just a little bit. You know, if we know our history, if we honored our history, we would see these things coming down the rails, so to speak. I think by creating a timeline in history, I think I've connected the dots. If you don't mind, I'll go through.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, the hard right, what they will do for power, it's endless. You know, McCarthyism was scarism, terrorism that freaked out our nation for years. It finally got outed after a couple, 3 years of torturing the American public. You know, that's the same group, by the way, that talked about and amplified the USS Maddox claim of being attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin, which was
the Vietnam War.
It's the same group that attempted to set up John F. Kennedy in the Bay of Pigs. It's the same group that expanded as the Pentagon Papers and history reveals later. It's the same group that instead of suspending and ending the Vietnam War in 1967, as LBJ had a plan in place that was accepted by the Diem brothers. No, the same group blows that up, so we're stuck with war again. It's the same group that decided in their infinite wisdom, since the Boland Amendment prohibited any American funds to support the Sandinistas and the freedom fighters, as Reagan called it. No, they can't have that, so they worked around it. And how did they fund working around Congress's Boland Amendment prohibiting them to go to war in Central America without authorization? What did they do? They created the crack cocaine epidemic across the country. That's right. Iran-Contra did that.
Yes.
So these are the same groups, finally. NAFTA, you know, they're willing to, because they want more power and more money, they're willing to destroy complete regions of America that were strong union bases. And I'm talking specifically the automotive industry. They're willing to create NAFTA and outsource literally hundreds of thousands of good-paying jobs, and some would say millions of good-paying jobs, outsourcing to other nations and other regions, and destroying communities. So this is what these people are capable of. And so when we're seeing, you know, insults and the terrible politics today, it's going to get worse. Nothing's going to change until we silence them. Until we, the people, say enough is enough. I've heard the frustration in your voice several times recently. You know, we're all tired of this nonsense. You know, we used to be unified. We used to walk together.
Right.
We were proud Americans. We accepted the challenges that JFK said about ask what you can do for your country instead of what your country can do for you. We were moving toward equity and you know, liberty and justice for all. But they can't have that. So, you know, I'd like to sometime, if I need to, I can connect these dots. I think I can prove a point that maybe it would be enough to shake America into, you know, consciousness a little bit and start recognizing that this stuff is happening in plain view.
Yes.
And it's happened before. So if we just are reminded from time to time that, you know, this has happened before, and this is what we did to remedy. There are solutions, but we have to talk about them. We have to work at them.
You know, Mike, I come on these airwaves Monday through Friday, and I don't come with any preconceived idea or view. I know I've lived long enough to know something is rotten in Denmark. And it's getting worse. And this, you know, chasm that's being created by somebody to split the American people. And the American people aren't astute as you are, or as Brendan is, on what is going on, what is taking place. They're too busy trying to live their lives. And then simplistic views on these different, you know, markets and places and you know, on the internet and, you know, and on these television channels, give people simplistic views about things, and people don't understand that there's somebody who doesn't give a rip about whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you know, whether you're a conservative or a liberal. You know, their goal is to be as greedy as they can and take all the resources and leave the rest of us behind. 844-967-2789 is the number. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, yesterday I was getting into a subject that I really wanted to delve into even more, but we ran out of time. And I said I would come back and talk about this even more on today, and that's kind of what I'm doing now. And that's more American soldiers are dying by suicide than in battle. Inside the startling numbers. This, again, is something that, you know, it's out there for all of us to see. And, you know, it is begging for us to pay attention to it as Americans. But it's not as visible as it should be, right? I mean, you know, you see all the great feelings and all the commercials showing the military and, you know, and how great things are in the military. And certainly we tell people that, you know, we love their service. But I don't think we comprehend the hell that apparently is going on with in our military. And, you know, this needs to be brought to the attention of the American people so it can be fixed. I don't, you know, it's one thing to send young people all over the world to die, and they die, and we say they're dying for, you know, democracy. And so if they're dying for democracy, that's an acceptable and plausible, you know, acceptance for young people to die. Well, they're dying for democracy. Okay, that's somehow acceptable in many people's mind's eye. So we don't mourn as much because, hey, they were fighting for democracy. Never mind, you don't have democracy here, but they're fighting for democracy halfway around the world. Well, you know, we've got young men and women on over 800 military installation bases all over the world. And they are taken away from their families. And they are dealing with all of these issues and all of these things that are taking place in their lives. And they're missing their families. And so, you know, it's one thing to be with your fellow, you know, soldiers and military, you know, colleagues. It's another thing altogether to be with your family. And so many of them are homesick. Many of them, you know, have kind of had it with what they are doing. And they don't know how, you know, to get and whether they can get the help that they need. And so what many of them do, unfortunately, in unbelievable numbers, are taking their lives. And so this is not, you know, an open conversation as much as it should be. So this is the USA Today. It's not Earl Ingram. On yesterday, and it says a Pentagon analysis, more American soldiers are dying by suicide than in battle. And this is inside the startling numbers. A Pentagon analysis says more U.S. soldiers are dying of suicide than any other reason, with 65% of them taking their own lives with self-inflicted gunshot wounds. 65% of, you know, these suicides, you know, and 65% of them are self-inflicted gunshot wounds. The report examined the causal effects of 2,530 deaths among active duty Army soldiers ages 17 to 64 from 2004 to 2019. That's a five-year period. That's not that long a period for those kinds of numbers. I mean, you know, if that was on a battlefield, my God, 2,530 deaths. You know, we were just talking about D-Day in Normandy, and I read where, you know, the waves of lives that were taken in those first few, you know, forays was 2,000. And we thought, oh man, that's a lot of people. Yeah, that is a lot of people who lost their lives, you know, charging the beaches of Normandy. But my God, 2,500 deaths in a five-year period of time by suicide. Why is that not alarming? Again, during the 6 years analyzed, 883 suicide deaths were reported. The analysis noted 814 deaths from accidental causes and 534 deaths from natural causes. Suicide of male soldiers numbered 752 during the period. Female soldiers were 51. Soldiers ages 25 to 34 had the highest number of suicides with 319. Troops were ages 17 to 24 were second highest with 301. And I forgot who I was talking to on yesterday who mentioned the numbers and what some of the major issues were. You know, many of these young people, girlfriends, wives, they're away from their young wives and families, and they're doing these things, and they lose their families. Brendan, PTSD and trauma, reintegration into civilian society, lack of popular support. U.S. soldiers are four times as likely to die by suicide than in combat. You know, this nation is in trouble if it gets into some serious war that requires having soldiers on the battlefield. Just, it's the truth. We don't even give it a second thought. You know, as people are ramping up the rhetoric about, hey, let's go, you know, as if it's a football game, you are not going to have soldiers who are in any mental shape to deal with going off, you know, to do and do the things that they did in the Vietnam War. You know, but what took place in the Gulf War, many young people took their lives. They didn't talk about it much, but they did. Let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Hey, Mike, I said I would bring this back up because I know it's a serious and important topic. You weighed in on it yesterday, but you didn't get a chance to get into any depth. So welcome back. You say what?
Well, this is a very, very deep subject matter for me. I was fortunate enough to be invited in to chat with some of these proud heroes unfortunately, once they did their time, you know, all of a sudden they look around and the world is completely different and they cannot relate to it. But it's a very complex issue. And I've talked to several of these guys and they pretty much all said the same thing. I must qualify. I've only talked to the Guard, National Guard groups.
Right.
I have not talked to the enlisted groups. But I was brought in. I talked to seven different.
So Mike, let me
that were experienced.
Let me clarify something before you move any further. You talk about the National Guard troops. There was a time when the National Guard was used solely for protecting what happened on United States land. Never before had the National Guard, which used to be considered weekend warriors. And people who had regular jobs and who joined the military, and for so long that their jobs basically, you know, were to deal with things, but not war. But all that changed in the Gulf War. Now you can go ahead.
Yeah, and along that point, the main reason why they enlisted to begin with is for some extra money.
Yes.
They had no expectation to go to war whatsoever. And therein lies a rub. Because, okay, they stepped up when America called on them. This is them speaking, if you will. And all of a sudden, you know, they're over there now, and they're being forced into multiple tours. And what they've realized is many of them are ill-equipped. Many of them went to, we're talking about Afghanistan and Iraq here.
Right.
They were not prepared. They didn't have the right training, didn't have the right equipment. And then as time went on, they absolutely lost faith in the mission. They didn't believe it anymore, but yet they were forced to continue. And by the way, also forced to keep a tight upper lip. They couldn't talk about this in circles. They could get court-martialed or kicked out of the service. One of the medics I talked about that, you know, they'd be inside the compounds, and of course at night they go out on their roots, and from time to time they come up with problems. He talked specifically about walking up to a scene where there was nothing but limbs and casualties as far as you could see. He said there were hundreds of them. And they were combatants. They were enemies. But it ripped his soul out, according to this gentleman. And when he tried to relate with others this story and this experience, it was unrelatable. Very few people and very few resources were available for them to cleanse their soul, mental treatment is lacking in the military, just like it is here in the public. So then they find themselves in state. Their challenges of reintegration.
So Mike, I got to get you to hang on a second, because I want to continue this discussion, because, you know, and as we move forward with this conversation, they were exposed to burn pits, and which has done some horrible, horrible things to them and the impact of their family. So, Mike, hang on. 844-967-2789 is the number. Talking about, you know, the suicide rates in the military. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Talking about these unbelievable suicide numbers of servicemen, in the military. And, Brendan says soldiers are being discharged with recorded mental issues, and they're buying firearms at gun shows. 65% of military suicides are with firearms. Got Mike from Kenosha hanging on. Mike, you say what, sir?
Yeah, thanks again. So, to wrap up, what I was going to say is, again, they feel like they're doing way, way, way more on their end than the general public. They're paying the heavy price for a political, cultural war, they call it. So they come to the States then, and they're finding their integration very, very problematic. It then turns into sleepless moments, nightmares, and then when they do wake up, it's always from a really, really bad dream. then they become, you know, desensitized and numb emotionally. And then the danger zone comes in. Now, they all talk about it. They said then they become angry and resentment at their fellow citizens and in the system that put them in the position.
And their families. They feel like, and their families.
Yes. And their families, yeah. You know, they're faced with fear and danger and death 24/7. 120,000 diagnosed with PTSD just from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars themselves. And there's yet very little analysis of the real history in regards to the Afghan-Iraq policy. We have not scrutinized it. We have not put it up on in the bright lights to examine for its whatever benefits or its detriments. It's just neglected, just like so many other important things about our history, Earl.
Hey, Mike, thank you.
So all these things factor in and weigh into the vets, and all of a sudden they have a weak moment and an opportunity, and then we've got another tragedy on top of.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for that analysis. Let's go to Brendan again from New Jersey. Brendan, you say what, sir?
I just wanted to make two points. One, why would you join the military when you see how our vets are treated when they come back and the support that they need so desperately isn't there? That's one point. And the second point is it's not there because the people that are in charge of doing and making these services available don't want to really do that right now because it just adds to the craziness of what's going on in this country right now. But really, if they wanted to up their recruiting, they would show that vets do get the care they need when they come home. And there are tunnels to towers, and there are great programs out there that people can donate money to help our vets and to do good things, and every dollar goes towards helping the vets. But I just wanted to say, within the recruitment effort, if I was thinking about joining now, that's what I would think about. But when I joined, they had bonuses for you entering. There was educational money put aside for you at the end of a four-year stretch with the military. And those things just
dried up.
They're not being shouted enough.
Well, you know, Brendan, I would say this, and what is at the root of all of it is you talked about, you know, the tunnels to towers, or however it's pronounced, and others where vets who have lost limbs and those kind of things, they'll maybe buy a home for them and those kind of. Why is our government, which sends those young people to fight and die? I believe, now you tell me if I'm right or wrong, that anybody who has been in the theater of war should not have to worry about whether or not they're going to have a place to sleep. As a government, we owe them. We should provide a home for them. I didn't say Mar-a-Lago, but we should be providing a place where those veterans don't have to sleep under bridges and eat out of garbage cans.
Because it doesn't put a dime in the pocket of the money-grubbing politicians that make the decisions to have it done.
That's pretty concise and to the point, Brendan, but 100% accurate. And, you know, we make these statements so people can, you know, hear and think. Brendan, I don't bring these subjects up because I hate America, man. I bring these subjects up because I see America and where we are and what she is, and I've lived long enough to know that we're not on the right path. Safe to say that, right?
Yeah, but I believe our youth, people like Calvin and people from his generation and generations to come, will get things straightened out and get us. You know, we need fresh blood in
right.
our government. We need younger people and fresher thinking on the conservative side and on the, you want to call it, liberal side. On both sides, we need younger people and younger thinking. But again, war puts money in politicians' pockets. Taking care of vets doesn't put a dime in their
pocket. Brendan, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you, everybody. who made the show go. Thank everybody who takes the time out to listen. Calvin, like I said, man, could not do without you. I'll be back on tomorrow with my co-host Sandy Williams. Up next, Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.